This is an extemporaneous Christian Science prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, website mbeinstitute.org. If you haven't done so recently, it is suggested you listen to the introductory 3-minute MP3, which is an introduction to Christian Science and to the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. There is also a very extensive introduction, which is in 4 parts, each part being approximately 40 minutes. We suggest everyone listen to it at least once every 6 months, as it gives a good background on what Christian Science is all about and the motive that one should have when they embark upon or continue a serious study of Christian Science and the system of divine metaphysics, which brings forth healing. The topic for this extemporaneous prayer treatment is omniscient solution, no blockage, deceitful fantasy. The title is intended to convey the message that the qualities of omniscience, which is omni-intelligence, omni-wisdom, and omni-knowing, provides a solution to unblock anything that tries to block the progress on a worthwhile, wholesome project, and that evil works by means of deceitful attraction to fantasy. By fantasy is intended to mean anything that is unreal but looks attractive, some form of materiality, and any form might be suitable to fit in the definition. For fantasy is unreality, and anything that fits in the definition of unreality would apply. Mary Baker Eddy states that we are barraged constantly with evil temptations. Edmund Burke is given credit to the quotation that states, "All that is required for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing." That's exactly what some did, referred to in the story of the Good Samaritan. And then there was one individual that gave exactly the assistance that was needed. Mary Baker Eddy stated that if Christian Scientists do not do their work, civilization at some point would be facing the greatest dark ages that would be the most intense and the longest in duration that civilization had ever experienced. And that was exactly where America and almost every other country was only a few months ago. How did it happen? A little bit at a time. That was stopped and the reverse begun in 2021. But in 2025, it resumed with great intensity. The President of the United States for 4 years was a fake, an actor. There were as many as 6 different actors that were out in the public at one time in different parts of just the United States. The evidence was clear. The first actor was recorded in a public meeting with the Prime Minister of England. The first actor asked the Prime Minister of England if he had seen a certain movie that he had been involved in. There were millions of people around the world that heard that conversation. And what did they do about it? Nothing. Nothing. An example of good men doing nothing and therefore permitting evil to triumph. And it only compounded for a period of 4 years. The swamp made the decision quickly that if they can get by doing that and being caught once and there's no repercussion, then why not do it every time one of theirs gets caught and executed? And that's exactly what they did. The governor of Michigan, the governor of California, the mayor of Chicago, 2 Supreme Court justices, state Supreme Court justices and juries, the number one cabinet of a number of different government agencies, all were caught, executed, and replaced with actors or clones or simply CGI in public recordings through the cable channels. And the public did nothing. The former president worked behind the scenes to try to gently awaken the public, because human mind does not accept what it does not want to accept, that it made a mistake. So it's either awaken it gently or there is tremendous rejection, which only delays the moment of truth to be accepted as being real. Yes, these are actions of treason, punishable by death. But is that what should be our concern? We must divorce ourselves from personalities, and we need to be focused on the event that is taking place. Do we want the country to be governed by the swamp who use actors as a front person? Hollywood made the comment that the intelligence agency that was responsible for this was better than Hollywood itself, who was in the business of tricking the public for entertainment purposes. But this is our country we're talking about, not a movie where people generally realize that it is not real life. Here is the definition of deceit by Noah Webster. The first man to publish a comprehensive dictionary of American English. Deceit, literally a catching or ensnaring, hence the misleading of a person, the leading of another person to believe what is false, or not to believe what is true, and thus to ensnare him. Fraud, fallacy, cheat, and declaration, article or practice, which misleads another or causes him to believe what is false. Project Mockingbird is a project by the same intelligence agency, and they started this project about 60 years ago. And the purpose, which is publicly available if you do a search on the internet, their purpose is to deceive the population so that everything the population believes to be true is false. Now, can you imagine our tax dollars are contributing to make this happen? President John F. Kennedy discovered this back in the 1960s, and he made a public statement that he was going to dismantle that agency. He was not a chess player. The president we have now, who has been in office publicly for the last few months, since January 20, 2025, is an expert, and very likely the best expert, at playing chess. Not just a game on a game board, but in real life. And obviously a chess player does not announce their move in advance. So not only was the president assassinated, but so was his brother, who was the attorney general that was going to be implementing a lot of the dismantling. Unfortunately, instead of dismantling it 60 years ago, it compounded its activities over that period of time. And millions and millions and millions have lost their lives as a result of the activities of our own government that was in there doing this for one purpose, to control the lives of everyone, not just in America, but around the world. If Christian Scientists do not do their work, then they'll be facing what we have been facing. One reason we like Noah Webster so much is he has quotes from the Bible peppered throughout the entire dictionary. And here are some of them that he provides to us that refer to deceit. From Job 27, verse 4, "My lips shall not speak wickedness, nor my tongue utter deceit." Another definition is stratagem, artifice, device intended to mislead. And this includes a quote from Psalms 38, verse 12. "They imagine deceits all the day long." The next one, in Scripture, "that which is obtained by guile, fraud, or oppression." And the accompanying quote is from Jeremiah 5:27. "Their houses are full of deceit." And the last paragraph, which is really one of the most evil, it says, "In law, any trick, device, craft, collusion, shift, or underhand practice used to defraud another." The existing court system is totally corrupt. The court system finds 99% of all cases where the individual accused is guilty. Even Hitler only had 97%, and everyone thought he was the biggest criminal that ever existed. But our own court system finds 99% guilty. Are we going to wait until it's 100%? Or are we going to do something about it? Noah Webster's dictionary was 1828, and he didn't have anything substantial to say about fantasy, so I looked up in vocabulary.com, which is an excellent one, because they really get their definitions from a variety of sources. And they define fantasy as follows. something you imagine, which might involve dragons, unicorns, or an imaginary best friend. If you live in a fantasy world, you're not worrying much about reality. Pleasant, maybe, but not very practical. That is where America and most countries are. They're not concerned about what's real or what is unreal. They just do what gives them pleasure. They're living in a dreamland. And the result is going to be a very abrupt awakening sooner or later. Do we want to wait until we are pushed off the cliff? That has been the attitude so far by almost everyone. It was indicated that the title is to awaken people to the fact that omniscience does provide a solution. Again, omniscience includes omni-intelligence, omni-wisdom, and omni-knowing. The word omni means one, only, and all. So the only intelligence, wisdom, or knowing that exists is that of God. Mary Baker Eddy's definition of God includes the following: incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. God is the great I Am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love. All-substance, intelligence. And the definition of good? God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omni-action. If one would study the proper way to read, they would soon find out that giving great attention to introductions, quotations, summaries, even just the table of contents gives them a direction on what is being explored in the text of the book. In the case of the textbook of Christian Science, Mary Baker Eddy gives us three extremely important quotes at the very beginning of the textbook, immediately following the title pages. The first are words of Jesus: "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." The second is from Shakespeare: "There is nothing, either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." And the third one is from Mary Baker Eddy: "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. That is thy high behest. Thou here and everywhere." All three of those quotes support exactly what has been discussed in this extemporaneous prayer treatment. Are we searching for the truth in everything we do in our life? Are we trying to live truth or a lie? Honesty or defrauding? Are we living a life of fantasy and deceit? Are we trying to block anyone we communicate with from knowing the truth by purposely lying to them? Are we carrying our life out as if we could care less about tomorrow and do nothing to build something for all humanity? Or are we being passive and just letting evil happen, thinking it's not our business? Condemning an individual is not our business, but condemning the evil is our business. We should be praying every day for the office of the President of the United States and all leaders around the world. The swamp has been diligently for 4 years to embark upon nuclear war. Fortunately, the chess player that was referred to, who is now the President of the United States, gave the nuclear codes to the military that could be trusted, who wanted to abide by the Constitution. And they've been the ones responsible for arresting and executing the actors out there, which are really the people that were elected, who were very evil. And they've executed them, arrested them, and executed them. And they have some 20,000 that are being detained that we know of, which are in the process of being processed through the military tribunals. But what are we doing? We let millions and millions of people coming into the country through the southern border, let alone the northern border and our east and west waterways. Are we doing anything about it? It's public information that the 2020 election and the 2022 election were filled with fraud, and that the ones that were elected to office were not the ones that had the most votes, because the whole election process has been fraudulent. What are we doing about it? Are we supporting the ideas that would prevent that in the future? Or are we just living a life of deceitful fantasy? Do we want the progress of America and other countries, all countries, to be going forward and building a standard that is one that represents the qualities of God? Or are we happy with going nowhere fast? If we're going to follow in the footsteps of Christ Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy and some other very excellent Christian Scientists, then our entire life should be living that kind of a prayer. A prayer comes about becoming effective only if we live it. Every thought, move, and action must be in alignment with the qualities of God. Our example will rub off onto other people if we do that. And if we're going to be passive, that passiveness is compounded throughout the universe of thought. And of course, if we're evil, that is also compounded throughout the universe of thought. Look at everything in society. Look at our music. Look at the language that is now common. Look at the movies. Look at the entertainment. Look at who are running the companies and what standards they permit. One of the top executives of one of the largest countries in the world was sent to prison because he was involved in child trafficking. The whole organization was involved in funding child trafficking. there have been over 2,500 top executives from major corporations who were caught. They're no longer able to continue that because they've been removed. Some of the most popular actors, one of the biggest show hosts, some of the top rock stars have been caught and arrested. Our tax dollars are funding the evil activities of our intelligence agencies. Fortunately, as of January, that all started to come to a screeching halt. But what are we doing to assist? There has to be a transformation of universal thought. Are we adding anything to the positive side of the balance of universal thought? Or are we just being passive? Mary Baker Eddy stopped what she was doing every hour of the day to make sure that she was only looking and accentuating the good, not criticizing individuals, not talking gossip about evil that one person or another one was involved in. She started a religious organization that ended up being the fastest growing that had ever been recorded in history, going from zero to churches in almost every country and every major city of the world, and many going down to small villages. But what has happened in the last 75 years? That was 110 or 15 years ago. But what has happened in the last 75 years? In fact, what happened the day that Mary Baker Eddy decided to leave this planet in an upright position? Her last written words were, which was on a notepad next to her bed, "God is my life." The day she decided to leave the Boston church, took her picture out of her own textbook and republished it immediately. Can you separate the discoverer from the discovery and steal the idea and expect to have a prosperous life? That's like kicking God in the teeth, saying, "You're no good. The Ten Commandments are no good. The Beatitudes are no good. The Lord's Prayer is rotten. You're all bad, God. And I'm going to prove it." They took down all of the statues that were built in her name to commemorate the wonderful things that she had done and the discovery and founding and leading of millions and millions of people who experienced millions and millions of healings. Are you buying any textbooks from the church that have been altered? Almost every one has been altered. The manual has been totally violated. We need to do what Mary Baker Eddy did, and that was to pray at least hourly. And she also prayed 3 times a day specifically in addition for the benefit of all humanity. affirming that they all had the truth available to them and would recognize it and would live it and would amplify it by duplicating it out into the world with their example. Imagine if everyone lived a life like Christ Jesus, Mary Baker Eddy, and the finest Christian scientists, Frederick L. Rawson, Joel Goldsmith, and Wentworth Winslow. All three had 15-minute appointments, and at the end of 15 minutes, the healing was over. Now, it shouldn't have been, because if you really want something to be permanent, you need to change yourself, even if you experienced a healing in which you didn't seem to be involved at all. You will have another problem crop up somewhere else unless you embark upon a transformation of your life so that you're living a life that represents the qualities of God, as mentioned in the definitions that were recited. We give you the specifics on how to do it, but I will reiterate very briefly right here. You need to start at the beginning of the textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, and stop at the end of every thought. Now, once you get into chapter 1, there is a paragraph or a topic covering one or more paragraphs. And at the end of that topic, you should stop. And then you contemplate. What is that telling me? And then you record it in your own voice on a permanent media that can be saved. If you do it on a cell phone, make sure you have a cell phone where you can capture what you record and put it onto a permanent media. Then you go back and look at it again, and you think about, how can I put this in my own words? What does this mean to me? And when you have a concept of what it means to you, record that. And then you go to the next one, the next thought, the next topic. And Mary Baker Eddy made it easy. She gives us the key topic of everything in the textbook. And you do the same thing as was just described. And you go all the way through the textbook. It doesn't matter how long it takes to do this. It is how you do it that counts. It's like being in a sports activity where there's competition. It doesn't matter whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game. Because if you do things correctly, whether you win or lose will take care of itself. A wonderful coach of a girls' running team was hired by the school, and they were the lowest in their league. They hadn't won a game. And this new individual that they hired taught the girls to not worry about competition. Don't even look at anyone else on the track as you were running a race. You have one thing to think about, and that's perfection. I am teaching you what that is. And if you run the race of perfection, there's nothing else that's important. That's it. Your competition is not an individual. It is yourself. Giving up any beliefs you have about your own limitation and focusing on perfection. That is what your focus should be. No one and nothing else. And I will teach you how to do that. Mary Baker Eddy said she makes strong demands on love. What could she possibly mean that she's going to make a strong demand on a quality of God? Divine principle. That is the key. Divine principle is structure and system, balance and harmony. You have to have a structure. Spirit is defined as the only substance. So that has to be what you think about. Not materiality, but spirituality. If you have a small child and you're going to cross a street, do you just let the child run across by themselves? Or do you hold their hand? Are you loving them more by holding and restricting them, or by letting them go free when they know nothing about the dangers of what a car would do if it hit them? Only when they have learned the responsibility and understand what is the right thing to do would you let them go on their own. That's what we need to do with our own thought. We need to let our own thought go on its own when it is following the thoughts of God, the qualities of God. Then give it all the freedom that you want. If it is following the qualities of God, if it is living the Christ consciousness, if it is living what the qualities are demanding, if perfection is the attraction and not beating another individual in some kind of a fake competition. A competition between individuals is a fake competition. Your competition, your race, should be with perfection. Don't worry about anything else. Perfection is what you should be striving for every day in every activity. Mary Baker Eddy says, infinite progression is concrete being. Do you realize the statement from Isaiah? It's used as the introductory quote to chapter 14, which is recapitulation, which is a summary of chapters 1 through 13. Precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line. Here a little, there a little. The race between the turtle and the rabbit. The rabbit took off like fire, wildfire, super fast. He got tired almost immediately. He laid alongside the road and went to sleep. In the meantime, the turtle walked right on by. Precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little, and it got to the finish line just about the time the rabbit woke up and the turtle won. Mary Baker Eddy says, don't expect to make any great progress all at once. She says, just work for a steady improvement. I've never taken a course in salesmanship, but just in studying other things, I've run across what the major theme is of a professional salesman. They follow a system. They cultivate their suspect, who becomes a prospect, and they service that prospect until it becomes a completed sale. Sam Walton, the founder of Walmart, built that empire, which is the largest retail organization for consumer goods in the world, by giving them one thing: customer service. Bring anything back, anytime, for any reason, and you can either have your money back, or if you want to have a store credit to go and shop right now, we'll give you a store credit. It's your choice. Customer satisfaction. My dad was in business for over 50 years. He said, "Son, no matter what it takes, whenever you have a problem with a customer, you make them happy." He said, "It's the best advertising in the world, and it costs you nothing. Doesn't matter what it costs in money, but it costs you nothing in your character. It adds to your character. Think of your character as a bookkeeper thinks about numbers. If you receive something, let's say you receive cash, sell a property, get income from your salary from another company. If you receive something, it's called a debit. A debit. Can you imagine that? If you just pay attention to bookkeeping and the words that are used, you will understand what living like a true Christian scientist is. A debit means a debt. A credit is when you give something away to someone else. That's a credit. So what should you spend your life doing? Receiving or giving? I mean, it's so simple. The principle of bookkeeping tells you what you should be doing. How many people pay attention to it? Do you want debits or credits? I read something just in the last week, and this was, to my knowledge, not a Christian Scientist. The source I read was not from anything that indicated it was intended to be for religion. They said the only thing you can take with you when you leave as a live person on planet Earth is your credits. And the only thing you cannot take is your debits. What are debits? It's what you receive, what you take. Credits, what you give. What you've given away, you can take with you, because it is your character. What you receive and don't give to someone else for their benefit is a liability. It's a debt. Every time you receive something, you have a debt. You have a responsibility to give it away for the benefit of others. Frederick L. Rawson, the one I mentioned, one of the three that had 15-minute appointments, he said, "We're on this planet for one reason and one reason only: to make other people happy." Can you make other people happy by taking things from them or by giving something to them? There's a movie called Pay It Forward. The theme is along the lines of what we're talking, and I highly recommend it. There's another one called Murder in Willapa County. That one features Johnny Cash and Andy Griffith. What a message is in that movie. I rarely watch anything that has the word murder in it, but because Johnny Cash and Andy Griffith was in it, and I've never seen a bad movie that either one of them were in. And I do enjoy movies. if it's someone who is really a professional actor and has a good story with it. A good story with morals. And so I thought, I can't go wrong watching this, even though with the word murder in it, wow. And sure enough, I was not disappointed. Murder in Wolepa County. I think it's W-E-L-P-A or L-E-P-A. W-E-L-E-P-A. Very, very good movie. Another one, Stand and Deliver. That has a little bit of rough language, which I didn't appreciate, but otherwise, it was one of nothing but moral values that were established with kids that were in high school, about ready to graduate. I think they were juniors and seniors. It covered like 2 years. And wow, what a transformation. It talked about mathematics being an equalizer. These were very disadvantaged people. They were in a very poor part of Los Angeles. And they had their race against them, because everyone automatically seemed to be prejudiced against them as being someone that wasn't interested in making progress and that kind of thing. And wow, that's one to watch. The teacher was an aeronautic engineer, and he decided he wanted to give instead of take. Had a great job, big pay. Those are three movies that all discuss what the theme of this prayer treatment is. Highly recommended. If we want to make progress, we have to look at every phase of our life. Have we done anything today? Or did we sleep all day long and never got out of bed? If you slept all day long and never got out of bed, then I have no message for you. Most people get out of bed, or at least wake up, even if they're bedridden. So if you did anything at all, that means you consumed time. Have you ever studied time management? Did you accomplish anything today at all? That's a goal. G-O-A-L. Have you ever studied goal management? Have you read anything? Anything at all? A message? Anything at all? One single word or a sentence? Then you better study how to read a book. The former chief editor of Encyclopedia Britannica. He wrote a book. How to Read a Book. His name is Adler, Mortimer Adler. He published it in, his first edition was in 1940. 85 years ago. Highly recommended. We have more tools than what he had in 1940. They didn't have anything of such as a portable recording device, which now, of course, is on cell phones. They didn't have a lot of things that we have in the way of tools that could be used for study. No one even thought of computers in 1940, except for the very early ones in companies that were involved. We have so many tools available that make it so easy to learn. And I gave you the formula. And when you get through the end of the textbook, you go back to the beginning and do it again. And how many times should you do it? For the rest of your life on planet Earth. Remember debits and credits. If you learn one little new thing from reading it the 47th time, it's going to add a credit that you can use for humanity. You can amplify it out with your own example. You will automatically reflect it. Automatic. On page 146, Mary Beck Reddy states that divine metaphysics has now been reduced to a system. To a system. Comprehensible by everyone, you and me, everyone. And on page 330, she says that there are 32 planks. You know what a plank is, a board that is used to build a platform. She said there's 32 planks. And when you learn those 32 planks, when you understand them, and you utilize them in your daily life, and you have to utilize the letter and the spirit, what kind of an attitude, what kind of an atmosphere are you going to utilize in your life? If someone did something wrong that you're responsible for, such as a child, your own child, are you going to use love or hate when you communicate that to them? The same with everyone you work with. The same with all your friends, all your contacts, all strangers. Are you going to smile when you walk down the street? You're communicating love. Are you going to go around with a big grumpy look? You're communicating hate. You're communicating problems. You're communicating yourself in the worst way. We have a choice of what we do with every moment. Are we going to utilize it to benefit all humanity? Or are we going to waste it? You can never recover time. Never. Tomorrow you could work twice as hard to try to recover it. But you could have worked twice as hard anyway, which would put you that much further ahead in your spiritual transformation. We're giving the ability to reflect the intelligence of God. Are we going to do it? Mathematics has 10 digits. 0 through 9, and 4 operators, add, subtract, multiply, and divide. I'm talking about just the basic level, not the advanced. The foundation. What are you going to use as a foundation? Christian Science utilizes mathematics all the time. Instead of 10 digits, we have 7. Mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Instead of having operators of add, subtract, multiply, and divide, we have operators that are called the Word, the Christ, Christianity, and Science. The Word is knowing what God is. The Christ is knowing how to convert what we are facing as a difficulty and turning a lemon into a lemonade like Christ Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy did. And how about Saul? He turned a lemon of Saul into a lemonade of Paul, one of the most prolific writers of the New Testament. That's what the Christ is. Turning a lemon into a lemonade. When Jesus saw somebody that was blind, did he see them as being blind? Did he see Tabitha and Lazarus as being dead? He said of Tabitha, she sleepeth. And he said of Lazarus, take off the winding sheets. Let him be free. The only problem Jesus had was in the area where he grew up, which was in Galilee. Why? It says he didn't have many healings there because they thought of him as a boy or as a carpenter, not as a special anointed one by God to deliver the message of Christianity. Jesus asked the blind man, do you believe you can be healed? We only want to talk to receptive people. We don't lay pearls before swine. We don't think of the individual as a swine. We think of the idea, the character, as being swinish element. And we go on to something else, to someone else. The third is Christianity. Add, subtract, multiply, and divide. We have the word Christ, Christianity, and science. Christianity is living like Jesus lived, utilizing your knowledge of God. Mary Baker Eddy gives it to us in the definitions that were recited in this prayer treatment. We have to understand what the basics are about God. We have to convert what looks like a lemon into a lemonade, which is the Christ. And then we have to live it, which is Christianity. We have to express it. We have to live it. We have to practice it. Vladimir Ashkenazy, one of the greatest pianists of all time. He was a Russian, as are most or many people that are the greatest in their categories, because greatness is really encouraged in Russia. You probably don't even know the facts about it, but that's truth. The easiest place to start a new Christian church is in Russia. So Vladimir was asked, how could he play with such perfection? Practice, practice, practice until the music plays me. That's what Christianity is. Understanding God well enough and turning lemons into lemonades until it's the way you're living your life. And when you're living your life to perfection, then you get into the fourth category, which is called science. Science is where the translation is automatic. And that's why Jesus was able to ascend, because he was into the science area when he ascended. But he was tested. He was tested in the very beginning from those three tests, you know, testings of the devil. He was tested throughout his life. He was attacked all the time. Who showed up at the crucifixion? Half a dozen people. His mother, John, the only disciple, Mary Magdalene, the one that was healed of being a woman of ill repute, and two or three others. That was it. He taught something like 50 or 60,000 people in two sessions. 4,001 plus women and children, which turned that 4,000 into probably 25,000 or more. And 5,000 on another occasion, plus women and children. And remember, he said children are the easiest to teach because they're receptive. So out of all the people that were at his two sessions, the children were probably the ones that learned the most. Are we paying attention to our youth? Are we nurturing like a mother? If you're a great man, you have to be a great woman also. Because what are the qualities of a woman? Nurturing. You have to nurture everything about your own life to be an example. You can't just be out there like some prize fighter in a boxing match. You have to be gentle and kind. Try being rough like you're in a boxing match with a wife. Do you think she will appreciate it? And if you're weak, do you think a wife would appreciate it? If your wife is strong when she needs to be strong, don't you respect her for it and appreciate the fact that she was? Well, that's a male quality. A woman likes to be like a man, and a man needs to be adopting the qualities of a woman. To be a complete individual, you have to express all the qualities of God. All of them. And that includes what is normally attributed to a woman and a man. What does Mary Baker Eddy say about the Lord's Prayer? She interprets the first verse of the Lord's Prayer, which states, "Our Father, which art in heaven," to be, in a spiritual sense, our Father, Mother God, all harmonious. So she interprets heaven to be harmony, and she interprets Father to be Father, Mother. God is Father and Mother. He gives us all of the best qualities of what we think of as from a man and a woman, all together. God is not a sissy, and he's not a prize fighter in a boxing ring. He's spiritual, expressing through his own character what one would think of as the best qualities of a man and a woman. Our Father, Mother God. Do you think it does any good to ask God to do something for you? What is the definition of God? Mary Baker Eddy defines it as being incorporeal. He doesn't have a set of ears to hear you. We're wasting our time if we're asking God for something. We should look to God's qualities. What is it that we are deficient in reflecting? What is missing in the way we are conducting our thought, speech, and action? Therein lies the solution to the problem. That's what the system of divine metaphysics is all about. And that's exactly what we teach you in these prayer treatments. We teach you how to live like a Christian Scientist, how to live the qualities of God, how to heal anything if you will follow our specific instructions on what to do. I don't know whether you're 1 in 100 that will do it, but if you are, your entire life will be transformed. You will be a lighthouse in the biggest storm, because you're going to still be standing there, shining out your light of spiritual qualities. Is that what you want to do? Or do you want to be like the sand on the beach that is beaten away? Do you want to be like a sandcastle that might look like great architecture? They can make some good-looking things on the beach, and it lasts until the first wave comes along. And that's what happens when we focus on materiality. We have on every page of the website two questions that John asked Jesus. Is there a material body? And the second, is there a material universe? Go to our website and you will find out something very interesting. It's at the top of every page. We call it the header. That's what everyone calls it. And so it's on every page, and there's a button to click to get the answer, and it gives you the complete story. Are you aware that after Jesus ascended, he came back in the flesh and met with John on the island of Patmos and dictated the book of Revelation? Dr. Robert C. Putnam, he was a doctor of chemistry, one of the finest, if not the finest, next to Mary Baker Eddy, of all Bible scholars. What do I mean by the finest of Bible scholars? One that sees the spiritual message in the Bible. Bible scholars basically don't see the spiritual message. They look at it from a material standpoint, and they try to explain what the Bible is saying, and they miss the whole point. Einstein was first introduced to Christian Science around 1940. His friend, Dr. Underwood, was on the Atomic Energy Commission. Everyone on that commission passed on as a result of radiation, except for his friend. And Einstein asked him, he said, how in the world did you survive? He said, I'm a student of Mary Baker Eddy and Christian Science. Then Einstein got really serious. He studied the book. He attended church services. He went into the reading room for quiet study. Now, the churches we had back in 1940 are a lot different than what we have now. The church has divorced themselves from Mary Baker Eddy. Even when I was a kid, every testimony, my mother and father were both Christian Scientists. They met at a Christian Science organization. My whole life was nothing but Christian Science. Our family, I have three sisters, all four of us, had perfect attendance for every year in school. The school had never had one student that had perfect attendance from grade 1 to 12, let alone to have the whole family. We were exempted from taking classes that were on health and anything related to that kind of thing. So my life was different. As a result, that's all I depended on. Dr. Robert C. Putnam took class instruction from Bliss Knapp. Back in around 1980 or so, his father, Ira Knapp, his wife, which is Bliss Knapp's mother, was involved in a tragic accident, lost her life. Mary Baker Eddy wanted Ira Knapp to be a lecturer and go out and lecture to people about Christian Science. He was very spiritual in nature. So she took Bliss Knapp under her wing and raised him. Gave him the finest education, and he devoted his whole life to promoting Christian Science. As a practitioner and teacher and healer, and when Bliss Knapp passed on, he had what would be equivalent to something like $3 billion in today's dollars. It was $400 million. It was in the 50s that he passed on. I think it was around 1956. He didn't do anything to manage his investments. Through his understanding of Christian Science, he was led to make certain investments that took no management. I presume it was probably land or something. Took no management. And he just kept it. He didn't pay any attention to it. He just kept it. He went about his business, which was promoting Christian Science and being a fine Christian Scientist. So if you learn from Bliss Knapp, you learn from the best, because since he was 7 or 8 years old, he had nothing but Christian Science, and directly from Mary Baker Eddy for 20 or 30 years of that. So Robert C. Putnam, he had the best that there could be next to Mary Baker Eddy for a teacher. And he wrote a book for 169 pages, which is about the Bible. 10 Bible lessons. 169 pages. But he uses references of the Bible, and some of his references you're required to read the whole chapter or two or three chapters in order to prepare yourself for one thing that he says in his book. And by the time you're done with 169 pages, of course, you shouldn't do it just once, because you're not going to be probably remembering what you want to remember, because you want to remember the whole book. And that means you got to do with that same thing you did with Science and Health. Start at the beginning, record it, put it in your own words, record it. When you get done, go back and do it again. Another book you should do that with, or part of the book, is one called Your Divinity Revealed. And chapters 4 through 10 are the 7 synonymous terms. One chapter for each one. The first one, chapter 4, is for mind. The second one is for spirit, and so forth. And that's written by our beloved founder of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, Helen Wright. She spent her entire adult life studying Christian Science and writing books. She was a ghostwriter for one of the most popular authors, but she finally decided I should be writing them myself, so she did that. Some of the finest books you will read next to Mary Baker Eddy's writings are the books by Helen Wright and Frederick L. Rassen, Wentworth Winslow, and Joel Goldsmith. They're the best of the best. 15-minute appointments, and they had a healing. Joel Goldsmith was called into the Christian Science nursing home in Boston, called the Benevolent Association, because there was a patient there that heard about him and wanted him to come in to help her overcome her problem. So he went there, and when he entered the reception area, the receptionist said, "You don't want to go in there. Everyone we have here is under," I don't think she said under the belief, she should have, "but everyone that is here is sick. And they all have the same problem. And it's contagious. If you go in there, you'll come out with the same problem." He said, "How many people do you have here?" And she said, "Several hundred." And he said, "You only have one problem." He went over and sat down, being quiet by himself. And in a few minutes, they all started, the nurses started coming out to the reception area. They said, "What's happened? Everyone is healed. All at one time." They were all sick and now they're all healed. He didn't look at needing to heal people. He looked at being able to overcome the belief that evil is real, that man is separated from God, who is perfect. Genesis 1 says that God made man in his image and likeness. And at the end, it says, and everything that God made is very good. And he rested on the seventh day. But the world believes in what happens next in the Bible. What happens next in the Bible is there went up a mist. Can you see clearly in a mist? I've been in a fog so thick I couldn't see my hand in front of my face. How are we going to see God clearly if we've got a mist that is blocking part of the words of the prayer treatment here? The mist is blocking the real view of what God is and what man is. Are you aware that Genesis 1 was written and recorded after Genesis 2? But God had his hand in the arrangement of the Bible and put Genesis chapter 1, which was the real creation of spiritual man, as the first thing to learn. If you learn the truth first, then you will be more prepared to detect error as being a mistake. So when we have a problem, the first thing we need to do is go to God and refresh our thought on what God is. Make a quick, short statement that it is a lie. Frederick L. Rawson just says, there is no, and then state what the problem is. That's it. And then you spend the rest of the time focusing on what God is, what man is, and what the truth is about all reality. Not about individuals on a generic basis. Talk about man. Man being this and that. God being this and that. Not somebody by the name of John Brown or Joe Harris or, you know, John Jones or, you know, whatever. Go to our website and go to the authors that were mentioned here. We have over 100. And check them out. They're the best. Wentworth Winslow raised a boy from the dead. And I wouldn't be surprised if Frederick L. Rawson did that. If not once, several times. He's very humble. We find out mostly about him from other people that tell us. His biography is very interesting. He didn't write it. Other people wrote it. Joel Goldsmith, I told you what he was capable of. He overcame every problem. Many things on our website you cannot find anyplace else. We focus on the truth about who really Mary Baker Eddy was and still is. The qualities of an individual is what the individual is. Those qualities never disappear. If they're good qualities, they are permanent. You take it with you. Those are the credits you take with you. Think about debits and credits. The Bible says we should tithe. That means a tenth part. 10%. Were you a C student in school? An average? Just an average? Well, 10% is for the average student. You want to be above average? You jack it up to about 20. You want to be in the A category? You jack it up to about 30. Remember, what you give away, you don't lose. You multiply it. You multiply it. And what do you have to give? Money is what a lot of people think about. And yes, you should be giving money, but not money per se, because you can't trust any organization to do with it what an intelligent individual would do with it. They cipher it all off. Nothing ever gets down to the people that really need it. So you need to do it yourself. Andrew Carnegie, one of the wealthiest people in the United States, he sold his business that became named U.S. Steel. I think it was around $400 million he had when he passed on. He went around the U.S. and the U.K. and he built universities and libraries. Unfortunately, he had a little bit of an ego problem, because he put his name on every one of them. But that's better than somebody that does nothing and wants their name. They want everyone to know their name and they do nothing. Well, he did some very, very worthwhile things. But it's better to be anonymous, because you want to be giving. You don't want to be trying to build an ego or feeding an ego. So that's why it's better to do it anonymously. So Robert C. Putnam, in those 169 pages, will give you a wealth of information. And these other authors. So what do you have to give besides money? Even if you don't have any money, you might be a vagrant on the street. You still have something to give. What did you do before you were a vagrant on the street? Some very bright people ended up on the street. What do you have as an asset? What do you know how to do? Can you teach it to somebody else? Can you give them something of value that will help them for their life? I know of a fellow that came out of a big department store and he was entering his vehicle and somebody walked up to him and said, "Could I have a donation?" He looked at him and he looked good. He said, "Well, why do you need money?" He said, "I lost my job. I haven't eaten in 2 days. And I don't even have money to put in my motorcycle to go out and look for another job. And I don't have any phone." So he said, "What do you do?" "I'm a handyman. I know carpentry, electricity, plumbing. I love to fix things. I'm very creative, and I have a lot of fun doing it." He ended up hiring him to come up to his house, showed him the list of things he had accumulated, and he worked for him for 3 months. He did everything on the list. And the day when he was done with the list, the fellow had obtained another full-time job the day before. So it was a perfect transition. He didn't give him money. Well, he gave him enough money to fill his gas tank and, to buy food for the day. And then he paid him every day for a few days until the guy could accumulate enough to be self-sufficient while he was then paying him once a week. Do we care about other people, or do we want to just get rid of the aggravation in our consciousness that they need help, and so we give them money? We have to live the spirit as well as know the letter, as Mary Baker Eddy tells us on page 330. Are we living the spirit of love? There's another movie that's interesting called Joshua. I won't tell you anything about it, but I recommend it. I think it's a very good movie. If we look at the spiritual message that is in a number of movies, most of them are trash, but it's in a number of movies. If a movie is not good and you watch it for 5 minutes, you ought to just turn it off, because if it's not good in the first 5 minutes, it's probably never going to be good. And don't be hooked into watching it thinking it's going to get better, because if it starts out pretty bad, it's probably not going to be any good. So anyway, I think you'll enjoy that movie of Joshua. So you know about the four operators, you know about the seven elements, and there are four levels, and they're on page 115 and 116 of Science and Health. And I'm not going to tell you about them, but I highly recommend that you go to the website and look at them in Science and Health, which will be under Mary Baker Eddy as the author. And just go to page 115 and 116. And we have the page numbers in the index that show where the chapter begins and ends. Just go to the chapter where page 115 and 116 is. Just one page. Well, a little bit goes over to the next page. But it's basically one page of text. And understand what those four levels are. Very important. Because you have to know where you are in your understanding when you've got a problem. What level am I when I've got this problem? It's not going to be the top level, we know that, because the top level is perfection. So it's going to be something below the top level. But you have to enter in where the level is that you have the problem in order to deal with it. But like Einstein said, you cannot solve a problem on the same level as where the problem occurred. So you have to think through that. You got to understand that. Here's some other things Einstein said about Mary Baker Eddy and Christian Science. He said, science without religion is lame. And religion without science is blind. Remember, he was a physicist. He dealt all of his life with matter. And what made him famous was his formula for relativity. E equals mc squared. He had to throw that away, because he thought it was based on relativity of matter. It's relativity of consciousness. Matter has nothing to do with it. He did get the point across that relativity is based on how you think about it, but he was still affected by his belief that matter is real. But that's pretty good, actually, now that I made a blunder in saying what I said. He also said, imagine a woman discovered this 80 years ago. You see, she discovered it in 1866, so I assume that was about 1946 when he said that. And the reason he emphasized the fact that she was a woman is because a woman couldn't vote and couldn't hold property to title to property. So for her to come forth with the solution to what the whole world is about and what makes it tick. Oh, that's another thing he said. He said, blessed art thou, because everything that is in this book. In other words, everything he'd been studying his whole life was a waste of time to him, because it's all in something that she had discovered before he ever got started. It was already a fact, already a publication out in the public. Oh, he made another statement. He said, if you follow Christian Science systematically and apply it scientifically, that it's effective. Remember, science without religion is lame, and religion without science is blind. And what is Christian Science? It's both. The religion is Christianity, and the science is the science of Christianity. And anyone can have a healing without going to see someone else or getting advice or taking drugs. If you follow the method that I've described here very briefly, it will be effective. It will be effective. Mary Baker Eddy, in her last class that she gave in her College of Metaphysics, and the last class was 1898, she gave them 7 treatments, one for each of the 7 synonymous terms. I will recite to you one of those. They're very short. I will recite to you one of those, and when I say amen, that will be the conclusion of this extemporaneous prayer treatment. And by the way, we have a contact page, and if you want to ask any questions, send us a message. And if you live in the U.S. or Canada, give us your phone number and we'll call you, because that's the way we communicate. We don't have time to do a lot of writing because we're all working very diligently our waking hours on the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. So we communicate through the phone. And if you will give us your phone number, if you are in U.S. or Canada, and if you're not, then you need to use Telegram and give us your contact telephone number for Telegram and the name you use on Telegram. We will add you as a contact and we'll contact you through Telegram. And that's good for anywhere in the world. As long as you have internet access, you can use Telegram. And their service is free for individuals because they're catering to primarily businesses. And so they give the individual service free. Here is the prayer treatment written by Mary Baker Eddy, and she encourages everyone to read it frequently. Since the first quote in Science and Health states, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free, I will recite to you the diapason of heaven for the synonymous term for God of truth. Truth is a sacred name for God. We must divest it of all materiality. Declare often, truth is my God, and my God is truth. Good is my truth, and my truth is good. Truth is enthroned in my consciousness, error and materiality are not enthroned. This is the Word of God. Amen. This is recorded 25/05/18, completed at 15/24 by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, website mbeinstitute.org.